Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Jeffrey Wyrow, professor and the director of the Military History Center at the University of North Texas. He's the author of A Mad Catastrophe, The Outbreak of World War I, and The Collapse of the Habsburg Empire, and most recently, Sons of Freedom, The Forgotten American Soldiers Who Defeated Germany in World War I. And he has an article at the Wall Street Journal, The Reinvention of Warfare. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jeffrey Wyrow.
Great to be here. Thanks, Ian.
Well, thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. And there's been quite a bit of controversy about President Trump canceling a visit to a U.S. military cemetery on Saturday because of the rain. This prompted Britain's defense minister to say rain did not prevent our brave heroes from doing their job. That is a pretty extraordinary act on the part of the president. And, of course, on top of that, there's a prickly relationship with the French president, Macron, who is hosting all of these world leaders attending the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I and the signing of the armistice. And, of course, it seems as though Macron took a swipe at President Trump by castigating the notion of nationalism. And clearly, as an historian, Jeffrey, surely nationalism and chauvinism were largely the causes of World War I.
Yeah, I mean, now there's a lot of things wrong with canceling the visit to Bellowwood and the Marne Cemetery and not going out to see the larger cemetery for the Meuse-Argonne. But this is where we are. This is how the United States president rolls in such things. And so none of this seems amiss to him, I'm sure. But yes, to your larger question, it is a question of burying this kind of America First nationalism or German alternative for republic nationalism and knitting ourselves back into these multinational organizations and being a leader, not a follower or a absconder, and really rallying with our vital allies and not stepping out of line in Paris to shake Vladimir Putin's hand. It was like as if Woodrow Wilson had lauded Vladimir Lenin in 1917 instead of supporting the provisional government of Kerensky and who were looking for a real parliamentary democracy. So yeah, there's a lot of things wrong, and this is an occasion to try to do what's right.
Well, of course, when you mention Putin, he seems to be dedicated to undermining the West and the Western alliance and the European Union by supporting far-right-wing nationalist parties. So isn't that a case of the lines being pretty stark there at the gathering of these world leaders?
Yeah, I mean, it's very stark. And, this is ultimately symbolic. We are talking about a war that ended 100 years ago, but this was a war that, taught powerful lessons about, the lure of nationalism, but the dangers of nationalism and the much greater power of coalitions. When coalitions unite together to work together to solve problems and to defeat nefarious enemies and bring peace and democracy, and it works, but it has to be worked at. And so I think this is what Macron was trying to do. France has obviously declined from the standing it had in 1918, but France still powerfully trumpets this message of European unity as opposed to the disunity that is spreading there. And so, this is an opportunity for the United States to really, insert itself back into this multinational alliance, NATO, and to support for the European Union, work in sensible ways to, bring this coalition back and, revive some of the strength that we saw 100 years ago when we were faced with a really colossal test.
Well, at the beginning of Trump's visit, or actually before he left, he tweeted out an attack. I actually think the minute he arrived on French soil, he tweeted out an attack on Macron, who had made a statement about the need for the French and the Germans and the British and other Western European countries to form a European army. And that seems to have gotten under Trump's skin. I think they kind of worked it out, the two leaders, subsequently, because there was that sort of photo op where Macron patted Trump on the knee and basically said, we were actually talking about burden sharing. And of course, Trump has complained that NATO, he complains about it being a freeloader and has never forcefully or even ritually supported and reinforced the Article 5 of the NATO treaty, which means that all nations come to the defense of a NATO country that's attacked. That was employed after 9/11, and to this day, NATO soldiers are in Afghanistan alongside American soldiers. So Article 5 has actually been invoked to defend the United States from being attacked, but Trump has never done the reverse.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know who briefs the president. I'm sure he is briefed, but I'm sure he doesn't listen to the briefings, because this whole Euro Army business was hashed out back when they, you know, basically 20 years ago. And, you know, and the United States supported a European force to, you know, as a spur to increase spending and, you know, so that they could partner with us in big ventures, you know, with big, you know, resources. And so now he's looking at this as being something that's aimed at the United States. And it's clearly not. And it's an effort by Macron and the others to have greater unity in all areas. And so, you know, it's just more of this sort of bungling, amateurish policy by the president than, you know, posturing for his base, instead of being a world leader, instead of being a national leader. You know, he's a leader of 35% of the country, and these are sort of red meat lines that I guess play well, although I don't know to the extent that people even understand this issue, really. But again, it was a missed opportunity to, you know, look at Western interests and how best to support Western interests and how best to project power when needed and, you know, with the right kind of, you know, interlinked resources. And just, you know, he just took it as a challenge, rather than seeing it as a good opportunity to strengthen Western defense.
Well, of course, in terms of Putin, he has found a way to essentially conduct a form of hybrid warfare beneath the threshold of what they call kinetic warfare, which is what clearly ground on for 4 years in the mud in Flanders Fields, etc., where a whole generation of young men essentially died because of a squabble amongst pretty much the same ruling royal dynasties. That, of course, has always struck me as the extraordinary irony. But you've written a book about the beginning of World War One, in your book, A Bad Catastrophe, the outbreak of World War One and the collapse of the Habsburg Empire. So I guess two questions there. Let's start with the historical one and then with the contemporary one. Do you agree with that idea that this was an amazing situation in which a whole generation of young men were just mowed down on both sides because of a squabble amongst European aristocrats?
Yeah, no, I just think that obviously the great powers were spoiling for a conflict. There was war guilt on all sides. There was an aggressive plan by the German Austrians to win a war before, you know, they were sort of overtaken by big Russian and French military buildups. So, you know, there was that. But then there was just a series of accidents where, you know, people overreached, as in this Austrian ultimatum to the Serbs, that then bring in the Russians, that bring in the Germans, that bring in the French, that, you know, turn it into a world war involving 32 nations. So, you know, it just, you know, calls for calm and sensible policy. And I think we're getting that out of people like Macron or Merkel. And we're seeing an American president who doesn't realize the gravity of these things and the really major risks and dangers that they pose. So this is a time for this 100th anniversary, the end of World War One, is a time for serious reflection about all of these issues.
Well, just on the other question, just in closing, this hybrid warfare that Putin is conducting is beneath the threshold of active, what they call kinetic warfare. And we don't even know the extent to which Trump has been manipulated or even co-opted in Putin's efforts to meddle in Western European affairs, exploit divisions within these Western democracies, including our own, and essentially do a lot of damage.
Yeah, well, and remember, hybrid warfare was practiced 100 years ago when, you know, the Russians or the Austrians would use militias and bombs to ignite little crises so they could expand their interests. So it's not entirely new, but it does pose a real threat, and it there's no great mystery to it. I mean, hybrid warfare was, you know, successfully used in Crimea, in eastern Ukraine, and Georgia, and places like that, and so we know what it looks like. We know exactly what's going on. It's just the president who chooses not to see because of his own involvement behind the scenes with Russians. So, I mean, there's no great mystery here, and there's no great, we shouldn't deceive ourselves as to the risk, because if we don't take this seriously, if we don't draw a line, then it continues to be crossed and continues to provoke crises that, you know, are going to be far more consequential than what we've seen thus far.
But just in closing, if we have a president who divides us, it divides American against American, and that you, of course, recall the famous adage of Abraham Lincoln, a house divided against itself cannot stand. It seems as though President Trump himself, he talks about the press as the enemy of the people. I mean, in many ways, his behavior could be construed as being the enemy of the American people.
Yeah, well, it's somebody who we've never seen this before. We've always seen a president come in and attempt to unite and expand their footprint and reach across lines to have a bigger coalition. And instead, we have somebody who's made a very narrow decision to excite the base and turn it out enough base and to work the Electoral College and hang on to the Senate, which is a vestige of times when small states had to be coaxed into a union with the big states, and so the Senate in no way reflects the share of opinion in the country, nor does the Supreme Court for that matter. So he's someone who's taken a very cynical view about the whole thing, and trying to exploit some of the weaknesses in the federal system, which were once seen as strengths and still could be strengths if we had a sort of wise, mature, and statesman-like leader, but that we don't. So he is deliberately dividing the House against himself in order to prolong his own political fortunes, but this is, again, something that has to be handled, dealt with through the democratic process, and I have no doubt it will be. It's just unfortunate and exposes the United States to a fair amount of risk in the meantime.
Well, Jeffrey Warrow, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Adrian, thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Jeffrey Warrow, who's a professor and the director of the Military History Center at the University of North Texas. He's the author of A Mad Catastrophe, The Outbreak of World War I, and The Collapse of the Habsburg Empire, and most recently, Sons of Freedom, The Forgotten American Soldiers Who Defeated Germany in World War I. And he has an article at the Wall Street Journal, The Reinvention of Warfare. And we're going to take a brief station break. We're back joined in the studio by the filmmaker of the stunning new feature documentary just out of Fathers and Sons.